Good morning, everyone, and happy Mother's Day. I am Wendy White. I'm a mother who has raised two artists in this church, one of them the musician. And when I became a parent, I was awestruck by the new life in my arms. I was also struck by the sense that every child was now my child. I actually had a transcendent moment in the grocery store next to the mangoes when I first ventured out after childbirth. This is a true story. Every single person I saw, young, old, bedraggled, dressed for business, glowed with an inner light. I saw them as I imagined their mothers must have seen them when they were first born, unblemished and precious. To this day, that unexpected vision of human beauty drives me to keep the earth a healthy place for all who call it home, especially our children. We ride into this century facing an existential threat. I'm going to say that again, an existential threat to our children's future, climate change. The question we want to explore today is, how do we summon our faith in the face of this looming crisis? How do we resist the urge to run from our fears into denial or cling to the hope that somebody else will solve the problem? And instead, rather just step forward with faith that each of us can do something to make a difference. Faith is a verb. It's not what you say, it's what you do every day. By summoning the fierce faith of all mothers to act for their children's well-being, no matter your gender or your parenting status, we undertake life-sustaining actions that are so much stronger than the forces of greed that are polluting our planet. Today, let us celebrate the mother bear protecting her cubs, the parent snatching their child from the road, the emperor penguin sitting through the Antarctic winter to hatch a chick. Let us celebrate the mighty urge within all of us to protect and perpetuate life. Ralph Grove, the Environmental Initiative Chair, and I are going to walk you through the steps that each of us can take to shift the culture toward action on climate change. And it begins with finding your own personal connection for the place where you live, the natural world around you. Where are you happiest in nature? If you are comfortable doing so, close your eyes and go to that place where you are happiest in your mind and imagine the things you love about it. What do you see? What do you feel? What do you smell? Do you hear something? Now imagine if these things were lost due to climate change. How do you feel now? Could someone give me a word for how you feel if these things were lost? Scared? What? Empty? Despondent? Horrified? Bereaved? Despair? We cannot lose these places because they are our home. We protect what we love. We love our home. We love our children. And together we can protect them by changing our habits, by living simply, by caring for the place that we've been given.
Our seventh principle declares that we are all part of the independent web of life. Einstein discovered that we're all part of the same waves of energy and matter that cross our universe. We are the water, the air, the animals, the trees, and they are us. He called it the space-time continuum. The Chinese philosopher Lao Tse called it the Tao, the cosmic mystery. On this planet, our home, we are part of an ecosystem that some have named Gaia, the Mother Earth being. We are microbial elements of a grand system of life that's so interconnected that every small action we take affects the whole and every other part of it. I was taught that this is a land of great natural resources. But consider substituting the word relationship for resource. How does it change your perspective when trees, animals, water, and energy are no longer resources, but relationships that we have with the world? What do we do with resources? We use them. What do we do with relationships? We nurture them, we value them, and we treat them with respect. How do we begin to shift our cultural perspective from one of exploitation to one of respect for the interdependent web of being of which we are just one part? We can make a difference by embracing restraint in our actions and our contributions to the problem. We can amplify that difference by finding friends who are working to do the same and sharing our ideas and efforts. We can easily be discouraged by the latest news about extreme weather, polluted oceans, or disease resulting from environmental degradation. The best remedy for that, I find, is to do something about it. I get together with colleagues and friends in the Sierra Club to plan strategies, lobby representatives, write letters, and to educate others. I can't make much noise by myself, but 1.5 million of us across the country can be pretty loud. We can also look around and see many examples of communities that are affected by environmental problems and that lack the resources, contacts, and experience to stop the exploitation. More and more environmentalists are speaking of environmental justice as we realize the significance of the intersection of pollution, poverty, and racism. Gas pipelines, coal dust, lead contamination, etc., are problems that often affect communities of color and regions where poverty is endemic. But we are all one people, and what affects me affects you. When we act together, we're stronger.
So after we connect and we see the whole and we see community, it's time to act. Small steps done by enough people can lead to big change. In fact, that is the only way culture shift ever happens. If every one of us does something, no one has to do everything, but all of us have to do something. Here's a video clip again of 16-year-old climate activist Greta Thunberg. She was nominated this year for a Nobel Peace Prize. And in this clip, she's speaking to the leadership of the United Nations. She is fearless and calls on all of us to do our part to decarbonize our atmosphere.
Antonio Guterres was speaking so clearly about the climate crisis. It brings a lot of hope to people. Antonio Guterres is one of the most For 25 years, countless of people have stood in front of the United Nations climate conferences, asking our nation's leaders to stop the emissions. But clearly, this has not worked since the emissions just continue to rise. So I will not ask them anything. Instead, I will ask the people around the world to realize that our political leaders have failed us, because we are facing existential threats. And there is no time to continue down this road of madness. Rich countries like Sweden need to start reducing emissions by at least 15% every year to stay below a 2-degree warming target. You would think the media and every one of our leaders would be talking about nothing else, but they never even mention it. Nor does hardly anyone ever mention that we are in the midst of the sixth mass extinction, with up to 200 species going extinct every single day. Furthermore, does no one ever speak about the aspect of equity clearly stated in the Paris Agreement, which is absolutely necessary to make it work on a global scale. That means that rich countries like mine need to get down to zero emissions within 6 to 12 years with today's emissions. Because how can we expect countries like India, Colombia, and Nigeria to care about the climate crisis if already have everything, don't care even a second about our actual commitments to the Paris Agreement. So when school started in August this year, I sat myself down on the ground outside the Swedish Parliament. I was constructed on climate. Some people say that I should be in school instead. Some people say that I should study to become a climate scientist so that I can solve the climate crisis. But the climate crisis has already been solved. We already have all the facts and solutions. And why should I be studying for a future that soon may be no more, when no one is doing anything to save that future? And what is the point of learning facts, when the most important facts clearly means nothing to our society? Today we use 100 million barrels of oil every single day. There are no politics to change that. There are no rules to keep that oil in the ground. So we can no longer save the world by playing by the rules, because the rules have to be changed. So we have not come here to beg the world leaders to care for our future. They have ignored us in the past and they will ignore us again. We have come here to let them know that change is coming, whether they like it or not. The people will rise to the challenge. And since our leaders are behaving like children, we will have to take the responsibility they should have taken long ago. Thank you.
She's 16 years old. She was talking to the Secretary General of the United Nations there. So if she can do that, we can all do something. We can take action. To take action that snowballs into real change, here's what each of us must do. First, identify an environmental problem that moves you in your heart. Next, take responsibility for that one issue. Own it. Make a commitment to it. And then research your options for action. Figure out something that feels doable for you. And then get to work. Finally, and most importantly, tell everyone about it. Get other people to take action too. If enough of us follow these steps and devote ourselves to addressing the climate change that we are concerned about, we will create political will for clean energy, and the policies we need will follow. We will catalyze a large-scale response from our leaders. I want to close by asking everyone here to make a pledge. As a congregation, we make a pledge to our children at their welcoming ceremony to care for them and their spiritual growth. I'd like to suggest that our pledge extends to taking action on carbon emissions. Yes. There are four levels of action any of us can take, and all four are going to be needed to reach zero carbon emissions. The first is the one that we've been talking about, the individual action that each of us can take. It may be flying less or going car-free more often. It may be eating less meat, which has a huge impact on emissions. Or just hanging your laundry outside on a hot summer day rather than throwing it into the dryer. Figure out what feels doable for you. The next level, if you think of these as concentric circles, is relational action. So write about what you're doing, post about it on social media, speak to your neighbors, or talk to the children who you parent about the innovations and solutions to environmental concerns. The circle around relationships is community. So invite your friends to a volunteer activity like Clean the Bay Day so they can connect with nature and want to protect it. We have signups for Clean the Bay Day. We've been doing it for years with this church, and Paul Greggs is going to bring his canoes to Lakewood Park on June 1st from 9 a.m. to noon. So this is a great way to get involved and to bring a friend. The last circle, the largest one, is political action. We all need to advocate for policy changes that will reduce carbon emissions. A mentor of mine once said that the act of voting is the final act of a citizen. The first act is getting involved in shaping the policies that we need. So we have letters outside with the UU Ministry for Life, and they are advocating for ending carbon emissions, a carbon tax that will create money for clean energy, reducing fossil fuel subsidies. There are many ways to do this. As Greta said, we already have the solution. So please go out and sign a letter today. Make your voices heard. And now I want you to just to turn to the person next to you and share the one doable thing you can think of right now that you will do right away to take action for the earth. Can you all do that? One thing. Congratulations, you have an action plan. So why don't you check back with each other when you see each other at church in a week or in 2 weeks and see how it's going. Offer your support. If we support one another, we can make these changes in our lives and start to send ripples out, as Ralph said, that will affect everything. May the change begin with us today. And may we do what needs to be done for our children. Thank you.